Hi everyone, welcome to today's IT Showcase webinar. Lyle Dodge, a Senior Program Manager with Microsoft IT. With me today I have Rick Oakes and Pete Apple. Guys, you want to introduce yourselves?
Sure, my name's Pete Apple. I'm an Azure Service Manager within MSIT, and we're part of the infrastructure team, so we make sure that all the application teams have VMs, subscriptions, PaaS resources, all the things they need to create the applications that are used internally for Microsoft. And so I make sure that everything is ready to go, best practices, security requirements. They do all the right things so that we can keep everybody running and out of jail and all the important things that you want to do when you're worrying about secure applications, financial applications, all the important stuff that makes Microsoft run.
Cool. My name is Rick Oakes, and I'm the program owner for our Azure Resource Optimization project within Microsoft IT. And also leading the consulting organization within IT to help people adopt best practices for architecture and designs and new sorts of hybrid cloud designs.
Cool. So today we'll be talking about managing and optimizing resources for cloud computing in Microsoft. We'd like to take a minute to remind you that you can use the Skype Q&A window to ask us questions at any time. Also, please use Microsoft Pulse at the bottom of your window to tell us a little bit about yourself. This will help us focus our discussion today. So guys, let's go ahead and dive in.
All right, so the agenda today, we're going to talk about a little bit of the evolution of the cloud management. It's not been a steady state. A lot of things have changed over time. Talk about some of the things we had to do to change the culture, the environment, with the way that people did development, the way people that had their VMs and all the like would manage those. And then how we've adopted that, how we've matured it, how we've learned how to optimize it, make it run better, more efficiently. And then also what we were looking for, you know, in the future, what we want to do when we're talking about the next resources, PaaS resources, Fabric resources, and how to optimize those as well. So first off is cloud management. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how we've made this journey. So first thing we want to look at here is essentially this is the way that we've looked at how we've adopted the cloud. So when you want to talk about this, you think about what we had before. I was a service manager for the hybrid environment. And so I had a lot of Hyper-V systems, we had a lot of physical systems, we had a lot of VMs. And these were all in data centers across the globe. When we started looking about we were going to move things into the cloud, it wasn't just we're going to take all of it and just shove it up into the cloud and start running it the same way that we've run the data centers. We wanted to be smart about it. So you really start to look at, you know, this funnel slide, which is what we think about the VMs and the physical systems going in the top, and then they get sorted out as they shift down into the bottom. So a lot of that was right-sizing things, taking a hard look at resources. Are they really needed anymore? Should we eliminate them? Should we just turn them off because nobody's used them in 3 years? There's a lot of systems that just sit in data centers, and they just run because they're just running.
And this is kind of like the same inflection point. I mean, we're going from, you know, virtual machines or physical servers running in a data center to how do I migrate or replatform to a cloud,
sure.
Either, you know, IaaS or containers or PaaS. We had the same inflection point a number of years ago when we went from physical to virtual.
Sure.
It's like this, hey, if we're going to have to do this and we're going to look at doing this for cost optimization and other things, it's a good time to do application portfolio rationalization, like how do
sure.
we consolidate, how do we look at, well, that's using CRM on-premise or SharePoint on-premise. It's a good time to go ahead and move that up to one of the SaaS offerings and kind of say, maybe our code isn't as special as we thought it was, and we can go use these commodity offerings.
Absolutely. And so when you talk about moving to a SaaS, you look at here, and you know, we have Office 365 and SharePoint Online. We had to have conversations, even within Microsoft, with some people who had their own Exchange server or folks who had their own SharePoint server that they were running internally at Microsoft, mm-hmm. and we're like, we have services now that are available that you can use. You know, 365, Outlook Online works great, and we've moved the majority of the company to using mm-hmm. it now. So if we're telling external customers use 365, we darn well can use it ourselves. Same thing for SharePoint Online. We moved a bunch of docs into SharePoint Online. We were able to then decom those servers that were running those custom services. We didn't need them anymore.
And that's really where the major gains you get. It's like when I go shut down one or two servers, but it's, When you guys get to go in and like, hey, I'm shutting down a whole series of racks.
Absolutely.
That's when...
Absolutely. So what we've done over time is we really targeted our dev test stuff first, and so we've closed the data center that was focused on dev test. It's closed, right? All the systems that were in there are either in the cloud, decommed, or the small majority, minority of them that had to go to some other data center got moved.
Yeah, actually, for our non-production data center, it was more about 50% was decommissioned and we never even replaced.
Sure, because a lot of people spin stuff up,
yeah.
And then since it's in a data center, nobody really notices if they spin it back down again. It's just running in the rack. Yeah. You know, this is stuff that we would notice when we started to move things into the cloud, and so we can talk about some of that. Some of the other things, we started to do some investment to move stuff into PaaS, so that's figuring out how to refactor the application, figuring out how to get it off of VM and into something that doesn't need an operating system anymore. That really saves us resources and time because you don't have to worry about patching it, you don't have to worry about all the stuff you have to do with an OS. And then we started to look more and more of where we can just leave the most minimal amount of stuff still remaining on-prem. You know, it's less than 5%. So we're talking about things that are high-value assets, where there's a legal requirement it has to be in a particular spot, mm-hmm. It has to be locked behind a cage, it has to be in a particular, you know, PKI type of system, or
you,
it's
you
legacy source.
You can't virtualize a physical device connecting to it.
Exactly. The smart card reader guy, you know, it actually needs the physical connection to be able to do this stuff. Same thing for some of the legacy source control, some of the Windows source code, some of that. We still got to figure out the right ways to make that completely secure for obvious reasons, and so some of that is still in locked cages for all the right reasons. As we continue to do this, we are planning on having 90% of our systems into the cloud by the middle of this year, middle of this calendar year. And we're on track to do that. Okay. So, a little bit about the service evolution. So, I am essentially on version 6 of our cloud adoption framework. So, think about that. And it's changed basically about every 6 months. And a lot of that has been by the evolution of how we've wanted to manage the systems and manage the cloud environment, and then also because of features and functionality that have come from Azure that have made things easier and better for us to run.
They release at a pretty good clip.
They release stuff pretty quick, in fact. And, you know, you think about it, you talk about MSIT, you know, we're Microsoft and all that, but I am also a customer of Azure, mm-hmm. right? We have support agreements with them. I pay them a certain amount each month for the amount of resources we use. And so we are essentially one of the largest, quote, enterprise customers using Azure compared to the outside industry. So we are more in common with folks like BP, folks like, you know, external banking companies mm-hmm. than, you know, some of the internal first parties that are using Azure itself internal. Yep. So we have a lot of the same problems and we can have figured a lot of it out.
And so, some of these are feature driven. You know, you look at, you know, managed disk just came out.
Yes.
Well, I mean, for the thousands of servers that we have in the cloud, if we can flip all those over to managed disk, it makes our service management lives a lot easier.
Sure.
So that might be, hey, you know, the next version of the model is going to be based on how we do manage things is managed disk along with a few other
Absolutely.
Things. So it might just require a 6 or 9 month rev of the model and say, hey, here's how we're doing things
yes.
and managing things now.
So let me go through this real quick here. If you look from left to right, essentially more centralized to less centralized. So you think about a traditional IT shop where you run most of the things a centralized server. That was us in FY15. It was essentially, and we talk about it in a federal, state, city model. You think a federal model, that's me. I'm the infrastructure guy. I managed all the VMs. People would place an order for a VM. 3 days later or so, they would get it, an email that says, here's your name of your VM. Here's your IP address. Here's how you log into it. And so it was primarily just VMs, IaaS. There wasn't a lot of PaaS stuff going on. They'd get a CI in service now so that they get patched and monitored and all the stuff you have to worry about. Then we started to move more towards, well, let's give you guys in the app teams more control. So we started putting the business process unit, the BPUs, onto the subscriptions and say, okay, we're going to give you the ability to manage it some of yourself. Start using PaaS, figuring out how that worked. We'll still have a CI in service now, so you'll get patched. You'll get monitored. We'll take care of all that for you, but we're going to give you a little bit more control. Now, this year, we've moved even more to service line owned. So it's down at the, you know, the app level. It's down to a collection of apps. And they have a subscription that they own themselves. I still will manage it for them. I still have access and be able to take care of things and provide support. We still patch it. We'll still monitor it. And so everything's still centralized for, you know, managing it within System Center. And then this coming year, FY18, we're going to move even more to DevOps model, the true CI/CD. So those guys, the app teams will own the subscription themselves, they'll manage it themselves. Everything's done through Azure Resource Manager. All the stuff will be native portal. All will be templates. And then they'll have an optional CI, right? They can get patched and managed by us, or they could do it themselves, right? We'll start using OMS, the Operations Management Suite. They can patch themselves. They can monitor themselves. They'll be able to do pure DevOps, where they could just churn things multiple times a day if they need to when they're making a lot of app changes.
So going from this the subscription model where we kind of had a subscription for, way back we had a subscription for federal,
yep.
and then we had a subscription for state, and now we'll have a subscription for city, which is the application itself. We have some technical debt to unroll from this.
Oh, absolutely.
Because when we have a subscription for state, for example, and somebody says, well, I want to do reporting on my city within that state.
Yes.
But that application, you know, applications and reorgs never happen in an enterprise. And so when we had a subscription for you know, a group of applications, and then we had an application move from one to another, and all of a sudden we were doing this Excel and Herculean mathematics of, well, what's the components of this bill that I should really, after the month is over, figure out, well, it should have been cross, you know, charged to them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now when we're in this pure DevOps, like a subscription per application,
sure.
it's a lot easier to take a few bills and add it to find out what your state and federal bill is. Than
absolutely. It's a lot easier to be able to take things as reorgs happen and just move it in the unit model. Mm-hmm. And it also helps when we're talking about things like HBI data, where it's, you know, high value information, mm-hmm. and they want to be able to lock that subscription down specifically, or SOX, you know, where they have compliance things they have to worry about. Being able to lock those down specifically is a real benefit. If you have I can't imagine having a subscription, one subscription for the full enterprise, because then you'd have to worry about all the pieces, parts, and how to lock each of them down individually. It just makes sense to have a good number of subscriptions that match up with the environment and the applications.
And I think even cooler, you know, you mentioned it a bit here on the DevOps, if you have a subscription for your dev team, mm-hmm. for that application, I think it even gets even more fun, because now part of, you know, a lot of DevOps and Agile, they have a 5 to 10 minute stand-up each day.
Sure.
Now 2 minutes of that stand-up can be, well, let's just launch the Azure portal and use the native tools that are out there and forthcoming in the native Azure portal, and say, hey, what's going on in our dev team as far as resources, you know, Azure Security Center, let's look at OMS on my subscription. Hey, you went and spun up a Hadoop cluster yesterday.
Yes.
You know, we're not quite ready for that. Can you please just shut it off and turn it on when you're ready? Or you know, hey, this person, you know, maybe we've got some security stuff in there that we misconfigured. Now we're within our team organically just learning together.
Absolutely. All right. So when you talk about the value of the cloud, we talk about tactical and strategic value. So for the short term, it's really about, you know, shifting the costs and doing a little bit more operational efficiency. When we talked about shift to consumption-based costs, you think about that. If you have a particular application and it needs a 16-proc system, right? But it needs that 16-proc system 6 weeks of the year, right? You used to have to buy that 16-proc system, and it would sit in the data center 46 weeks of the year and not really be very busy, right? It would just sit there,
yep.
idling 2% CPU. With a cloud, you can then just get that 16-proc system and just run it those 6 weeks of the year, and then you decom it and you're not using it, right? And so this can save you money over time. It can also help you set up better resiliency, better geo-redundancy. You can set up a couple of those systems, one in the eastern U.S., one in the western U.S., spin it up, make sure it runs. You have the redundancy, so you don't have to worry about things going out. And then when you're done with whatever application or the end of the quarter, end of the year, you know, the big flux of data that you have to worry about, you can just spin it back down. Longer term, what we're really talking about is, you know, cost avoidance. You're talking about investment for protection. You're stopping the data center expansion or things you're having to retrofit. We've been closing data centers, and we haven't spun up new ones. We're leveraging Azure as a fungible resource that we can just use as we need and then bring it back down when we don't. We actually don't have to then buy more hardware. We've done a lot less capital expenditures. We've done less contracts where we've had to do 3 or 5 year contracts on, you know, physical hardware, large storage racks, some of the stuff that we've had to use over time. And so we've really been focused more on, you know, a lot of the app teams have to go and have conversations about, I need this hardware and I need to justify why I need this hardware because I have this IO level or this whatever level that I need to meet these 4 or 5 weeks of the year. And so I have to spend all this time justifying this big, huge capital expenditure.
And then you and, got like, oh, the follow on, you're like, well, you know, our we didn't line up our CapEx cycles with our depreciation cycles.
Yes.
And so now maybe next year, like, we have like this, you know, $X million bow wave that we didn't have the prior year. So let's go figure that out. Like, switching to the pure OpEx, like, it avoids that entire, like, and none of that is actually helping you deliver business value.
No. Oh, absolutely not. Yeah. And if you think about it, you talk about sizing, right? People always size for the big spike. Right? And what we have found in the cloud, even, people will size their cloud resources for the big spike, right? So they will get an 8 or 16 processor system and will notice in the performance analysis that they're not really using it, right? If we had bought that system, it's now stuck there with a contract, you know, and the capital expenditure's already done. With a cloud resource, it's like, oh, you're not using 16 procs. Okay, we're going to shrink you to 8. And that's the end of the conversation. Yeah. There's no capital that we've had to expend. It's just crank it down. It's so simple to take care of. All right, so this is just a little bit of the traditional financial management stuff. I like to show this so that we can talk about, you know, the things you worry about before versus the things you worry about now. You really talk about a monthly bill. You're looking at things in a longer term because you're buying hardware. You're having to worry about depreciation. You're looking at budgets and, you know, the longer term things. There's a lot more planning and then longer term cycles. But a lot of the stuff we're doing now with the cloud financial management is worry about short term, right? You're talking about what your real time spend is. You spun something up this week, do you need to spin it back down? You know, looking at optimization, right? When I talked before about, you know, you spun up a 16 processor system, you're not really using it, we're going to shrink it back down to an 8 or to a 4 processor system. That saved you real money in OpEx, right? That's some of the knobs that you had to turn before that wasn't there. Now you have them available. You'll be able to use this. And then with people, you really start to talk more with the dev ops. You really are pushing it to the app owners to be more involved with what the costs are. Used to be they would just, you know, hardware would show up, they'd start using it. They don't care. Now it's, what are your resources? What are you using? How are you using it? Could you be more efficient? Can you write this better? Can you write your code better? Can you do a better job of ensuring that you're using the right resources at the right time with the right reliability?
Can you switch over to a serverless model and just not deal with those and let it resize back down on its own?
Same thing with some of the data sources we're looking at. Better APIs, better ability to pull information in. We're using a lot of Power BI to look at different reports in a different way, more real time. And then being able to, you know, look at third-party solutions. We looked a little bit at like Cloud Cruiser, various things that are available, and then we're working closely with the product group on ways that we want to do financial management and cost and management so that we can make sure that we're running the business efficiently. Okay. I think I'm going to hand it over to Rick. We'll have a little conversation here about the cloud adoption.
All righty. So as we've gone through our journey to the cloud over the last 4 or 5 years inside Microsoft IT, we've seen ourselves and we've also seen other partnering companies go through this process where first you have this chaos where you're being told by management or whatever reasons to go to the cloud, and it's chaos. It's utter chaos because in Azure there's 92 different resource types you can choose from. So it takes a little bit of time to develop that technology and that skill base to understand what features and resources you should be selecting. It advances toward awareness once you start getting some of that knowledge, the SME expertise in the cloud. And then it advances to security. This is when you are running things in the cloud and you need to secure them. And most companies get stuck here, and it's such a challenging concept because operating in the cloud securely has become kind of a big deal in the last few years. And it's so important that we can obviously spend a lot of time there and focus all of our effort there. What we've seen is as you keep advancing into the cloud, governance becomes a huge topic of concern, which is most of the work that Pete alludes to. Things like subscription models, RBAC, managing permissions at really economies of scale for an entire IT organization when you have thousands of employees. Mm-hmm. And the last part of the model is optimization. This is when, okay, I have a subscription model, I have resource governance, I have these things. Well, now what happens is you get massive sprawl. You get hundreds of subscriptions and hundreds of resources, and some of them are abandoned, just like we saw with our on-prem resources. So optimization, that ability to go through all of your spend and know, I'm actually buying things with this money and it's benefiting my business. A lot of times, you know, when you spin up random resources and they sit there and idle, and then people move to different teams or reorgs happen, there can be this opportunity for a lot of waste in your budget.
And really, when you think about it, I use this with other customers when I talk about it. It's if you have teenagers, you understand this problem. It's basically, I'm being very serious about it. It's like, go turn off the lights when you're done.
Yeah.
Go close the fridge.
Yeah.
Go. I mean, when you're talking to the app developers, they love to spin things up because they're trying out things.
Yeah,
and we
yeah.
want them to do that. We want them to try out new stuff. We want them to learn how to do the cloud and how to spin this stuff up. But when you're done, turn it off.
Right.
Right.
So I have this story that I usually tell. It's like, you know, if you have a few employees and they have this cool new idea and you give them the corporate credit card and tell them to go to Best Buy to buy a few machines for their project, you know, if they go into Best Buy with a corporate credit card, they're going to go find the most expensive machines in that company, in at Best Buy, because they think that their project is the most important project, which it is to them, which we want to respect. When we do that at scale with thousands of employees, the opportunity cost is massive.
Sure.
I mean, when we take a look at that, we'll take a look at one specific machine here on this slide. This is a D14 SKU.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a fairly powerful machine in Azure.
Yes.
It's one of the better ones you can select. This is actually a pretty well-utilized machine. This server that we're looking at right now peaks at 25% CPU utilization, which is far, far above the average that we've seen when we work with partner companies and within Microsoft. You know, the on-premise world, we saw between like 6 and 8% largely for CPU utilization across the board. So here we're looking at a team that does pretty good with resource utilization. It's a D14 SKU, $1,400 a month that they're paying for this server.
Right.
Now, when we apply our logic for resizing to this server, and we say, okay, if we resize this down to the 95th percentile of what we're seeing for CPU utilization, we can drop this server down to a D12, which is $430 a month. Now we're only paying for the area underneath the shaded in. So it's like an area graph that we're looking at here. So we just saved $970 for this one server by sizing it appropriately. What this does is it brings the CPU graph for the server up at between 40 to 80%. That's kind of our target area for our recommendation logic.
So when you talk about a P95, a lot of people may not realize that, but this is basically a statistical value that says we're going to look at the 95% of the CPU, and the top 5%, we're going to kick that out as the edge cases.
Right, because when you log on to your computer, it spikes the processor to 100% for about 3 seconds, right? And that's okay. We're okay with that sort of behavior.
Yep.
Same with code. If your code is spiking your processor, that's a totally normal computer science type behavior that we're okay with.
Mm-hmm.
And we would really like to see the P95 value between 40 and 80% because we feel like that's a healthy way for a processor and a computer to operate.
Absolutely.
And we've got a lot of really smart people in IT that work on this tirelessly. So, you know, we've done this sort of recommendation and resize on tens of thousands of servers within IT, both on-premise and in the cloud. And so we vetted this recommendation very thoroughly, and it's been extremely effective.
So it looks like you already saved a ton of money, but could you save more?
We can. We can save more money. So the concept of turning off servers when they're not in use.
Sure.
Again, this server is actually a very conservative example where it's being used between 6 in the morning and 9 p.m. at night.
Sure.
So most servers we see are only used between 2 and 4 hours a day. So this, again, is a very conservative example. If we turn this server off when it's not in use, we save an additional $162, as you can see from the area graph. That's about 38% of the total cost that you had from the D12. So if you did snooze and you didn't do the resize, you would still save a really good chunk of change.
Sure.
So either one of these approaches would save you a lot of money. But together, we can see that we are now running the same server and the same workload for $268 a month instead of $1,400 a month. And why that's important for a single server is that, of course, you want to impress your boss and say, I just saved $1,000 for my company and I want a promotion. But what you really want to say is, I've done that for 1,000 servers.
Absolutely.
Or I've done that for an entire application portfolio. Mm-hmm. And I just brought my application portfolio down, cost down by 70%.
Sure.
This is a non-production server, which is why we turn it off when it's not in use. Production, obviously, you can't snooze it a lot of times. But we can resize. We can resize production servers and get most of that cost. And if you say that, you know, for my environment, 70, 80% of my servers are dev, test, integration environments, user agreement environments, we see that pretty commonly.
Yep.
And if I can resize and snooze all of my non-production environments, I can save, you know, depending on your environment, we have seen in Microsoft IT that you can save 60 to 70% of all of your non-prod spend with these concepts.
Yes.
So now how do we operate them at scale? How do we how do we resize and how do we snooze thousands of the servers every day? We built some simple tools that plug into REST APIs. If you're looking at these ideas, you can use command line interface, you can use PowerShell, you can use the REST APIs, you can do any of this. We had to build some tools for the scalability concerns we had because we operate 20,000 IaaS VMs. So we have some simple tools that just plug into REST APIs. You can type server names in here. You can pick your recommended SKU, which will spit out our recommendation engine to them, and they can select when they want to do the resize or if they want to do it now.
Sure.
They can pick the SKU that they want to pick or the recommendation SKU. And so it's very simple UI. It's not a complicated idea. Just doing it at scale has, we've learned some lessons there.
And one of the things that we've done is we've worked a great deal with the product group on some of the things. Yeah. And they actually have a blade available now in the portal for Azure Advisor. So if you go to the portal in Azure and you look for Azure Advisor, it should be available here. If it's not already, I think it is very soon. And it basically will give the same similar recommendations, yeah. right? It'll say the CPU for this particular VM has been fairly low. You could resize it, or you could, you know, shut it down for a portion of the day. So, and that's individuals. So you can look at a subscription. So depending on how many subscriptions you have, you can do this within the native portal, or
well,
you
especially
can,
like a DevOps team.
If I've got a DevOps team,
that's a great. Hey, we've got 10 servers in our environment. We can do that easily.
Sure.
And then especially as we keep pushing accountability down to the dev
team. And then, you know, if you have a small dev team, you can easily build something as simple as this. It literally just calls into the REST API and is able to do a number of VMs at once.
Yep.
And we just found that to be a simple thing. We're also talking to the product group on how to batch these kind of things. And you should expect to see some stuff fairly soon that looks very similar.
Yeah. Same thing for the snooze concepts. We have three ways we approach snooze. We have on-demand snooze, where I say, I want to shut these servers down right now, and you can paste them into a similar window, or you can set schedules.
Yes.
So I can say, hey, you know, I don't use these servers after 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and on the weekends I don't use them at all. And you can set up a schedule for server names and go ahead and run that schedule, which, again, saves incredible amounts of cost per server. Again, very simple UI, just calls REST APIs to deallocate servers inside the portal. The portal experience actually does have the ability to schedule a deallocate now.
Okay.
That's a feature that came out a few weeks ago.
And that's so really important. Like if you want to snooze, you can save, but if you want to resize and switch server switch machine classes, you need that deallocation in order to switch machine classes.
Yeah, there's a small reboot when you do the resize.
Yeah. So that's really nice. So you guys have been talking kind of about this so far. The last two slides have been talking about, hey, how do we do stuff around IaaS? We just had a question come in. You know, are there any optimization scenarios that you guys are looking at tooling or automation, or how to, you know, beyond snooze and resize of IaaS VMs? Like, what's the future for?
So we also do a lot of resize and recommendations on PaaS/SQL database. PaaS/SQL database is fairly expensive but extremely powerful. It's an incredible feature because instead of having to run your own on-premise SQL installs with all of the nightmares of OS patching and maintenance, you can run it in the cloud. And the scalability of the SQL PaaS resource types are incredible. It's really incredible. So we do this similar P95 type calculations based on DTU, which is what the product group uses to measure the performance of a PaaS/SQL database.
Sure.
So it's a database transaction unit. It's a combination of CPU, memory, and I/O.
Then we can also look at, like, for example, I know in some of our teams, especially our teams that are doing web stuff, you know, on web deployment slots for, you know, the old Azure websites, you know, app service environment.
It's kind of a problem.
You know, you devs go and spin up and deploy, now they all of a sudden they have a bunch of deployment slots that are filled up and idle. So I know we're doing that too. I think there's a lot.
We have quite a few more recommendations kind of coming down the pipe for us, but we also have recommendations on PaaS web and worker roles that are shut down, which you still pay for because they're stateless, right? So this concept that, hey, if I turn something off, I shouldn't pay for it, it's a little counterintuitive in some services that are stateless. So going through and making the recommendation to delete any PaaS web or worker role that is deallocated, what that does is it saves 100% of the cost because you're deleting it. But we also can confidently say that that's not business disruptive because we know those PaaS web and worker roles were built from Visual Studio.
Yep.
So we know the code base is not being lost or deleted when we put recommendations out there to clean up a lot of your instances. Same thing with almost all of the other PaaS type instances. When, like you said, when you have the environment switching, you have that ability to quickly and easily scale back the number of instances you have for your not production instance counts. That's kind of important because, you know, you say you have four nodes in a cluster. Mm-hmm. You can switch those, and a lot of times you leave four in the non-production cluster. Downsizing that down to one is a really simple, easy way to save a lot of money.
Yep. And this just upskills our engineering practices, frankly.
So we've totaled up all the cost savings opportunities, and we show it up to our management chains within IT to see a lot of behavior change when they go and they instruct a lot of their employee bases to pay attention to the recommendations and the costs. We see this natural life cycle sort of happen when people see the opportunity and the recommendations, where they see the waste, right, or they see the opportunity cost. You see how much money there is between how much you're paying and how much less you could be paying if you took the recommendations. And they're engineers, just like all of us. We don't believe it unless we're proven to. So we have this examined data part of the optimization lifecycle that we see where they have to click on the recommendation and we have to explain the P95. Or actually, we have this pretty cool set of websites that, that explains why the recommendation was made that way, why it's valid. And again, we have some really brilliant engineers on the team that
this is really kind of because we're a technology company.
We are.
It's amazing the number of customers I've talked to, and if they're a technology-based company, it's like everybody in the room are an engineer, and you have to prove it to
us. You have to prove it. And so we have the tools.
A lot of people don't fully recognize that. And it's not just technology companies. Any team that has an IT org and some devs, they won't believe you until you show them the data. And part of what I had to do, actually, was beef up a bit our performance gathering for on-prem systems so that we could size those properly, and then beef up our collection, you know, and analysis for the stuff in the cloud so that we could have some real-time data about what you were really doing and how your system is really running. Because if you come to them and say, we're going to shrink this, they'll say, oh, you can't do that. We're very important.
That's my production system.
You can't touch my stuff. It's very, very important. You're only using 2% of the CPU, and you have no I.O. going through it. So we're going to go ahead and just shrink you down right now.
Which means you only patched the server. That's all that happened on it.
But you absolutely have to have some data, unless you have your CIO standing behind you saying, yes, you're going to do that.
I think some of the funnest use cases in this that we've had so far is around some of the recommendations that we do around SQL databases.
Sure.
I mean, we'll go to a customer that's having maybe, you know, performance issues or other things, and our people that run these kind of same, you know, queries and reports, hey, how could we fix the performance of the SQL server?
Sure.
And they'll go to them and they'll say, hey, you know, let's just go ahead and turn on page compression in production for your system, and it will drop. Or you know, famously, for high transaction systems that have a lot of inserts, let's go put some indexes on your table that you're doing massive inserts on. It's
crazy talk.
Here's the data science behind it, and just trust us.
Well,
because if it doesn't work, we can roll it back quickly.
You bring those up, and it's very interesting because I've had that battle for years on premise. The nice thing is in Azure now with some of the SQL stuff that's in there, they will send the recommendations to you. Right? I get recommendations from Azure about some of the SQL DBs that I'm also an admin on, and it will say, we've noticed the performance and the amount of time it's taken for some of your queries, and you could put indexes on this one, this, and this one. And I get that from Azure for as part of the service.
And it's like literally, click, go for it.
I can take that to the devs and look, and it's like, Azure says you could improve this SQL server. Let's go ahead and do what this says.
And if you do that now, you can drop the DTUs down, drop your bill down.
Absolutely.
Right. So we see on average a 20 to 30% drop in the performance needed out of a SQL database if you do compression and those sorts of
It's just
practices.
Smart stuff.
So the next part is the implement the savings changes on the lifecycle. That's when they, okay, you've proven to me the recommendations make sense, and then I go to the tools we just previously showed you, and I downsize or I snooze my servers to save the cost. And then they review the effects. They go back to our pages that we have built that show the total cost opportunity, and they see the cost drop the same day that they went and made the change to do the recommendation. And the recommendation cost value is down.
Sure.
And so, you know, you have this psychological effect of, hey, you just saved a lot of money, which, you know, who doesn't like to save money, right? You get that dopamine rush whenever money's involved, right, where you see a bunch of money, and then you make some changes, and then you see far less money being spent from your organization, and you get that rush of feeling efficient and effective, which is kind of an IT nerd engineering kind of a...
Absolutely. I love that. That's like the carrot and the stick. That's a really nice carrot way. You know, I think that's really how we've seen organically good behavior happen versus the stick of, like, you guys are wasting how much money this...
You have to go.
Like, go fix it now versus, like, you know, if I'm a developer and I care about my career, and I can say, look, you know, here's, I'm learning how to do things, do operational stuff along with doing development stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't have to go get a security expert certificate, but
right.
I can start to do these really cool things.
And we see that at scale with not just a few teams, but now thousands of engineers are learning that you're paying by the hour and that your SKU size matters and that turning services on and off really matter. And mm-hmm. so they're able to operate in a completely different model where we have our devs now caring about infrastructure. And they're learning about it, and they're learning about DTUs, and they're learning about SKU sizes. It's really
they're not going and becoming like a certified, you know, infrastructure person.
No,
but they're understanding like, it's like, hey, if I'm going to go spin up a VM here, and I'm going to go spin up the other VM in my corporate network, but it's on a different continent, I have to care about network.
Well, and the nice thing is that a lot of the stuff can just fit into their normal cycles, right?
Yeah.
We have maintenance windows for many of our systems. So Saturday night, midnight to 2, we're going to do patching. We're going to do all this other things. You can also resize the server. Because a lot of the resizes will take a downtime.
That's a question that just came in.
When
Which types of server resize require downtime and how much?
So resizes do require 2 to 3 minute drop.
Yep.
That's within
the same class.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so if we're going to go from like an A to a D series,
sure,
that requires a deallocate and then a rebuild. So it's not that much more downtime.
No, it actually is just a deallocate and then change the other size and then it comes back up.
Yeah. So maybe more than like 1 or 2 minutes, but it's still it's not like you're saying we're going to take a 4-hour downtime window.
Right. Absolutely not.
So
it all fits within a normal downtime window that we've got for all of our work. And the nice thing is for the PaaS SQL databases, you can just change those sizes.
That's an SLA billing change.
It's not even a
So here we have an example. After we rolled out all of our snooze tooling, this is a little over a year ago, we're looking at data of average CPU utilization. We kind of talked about that previously. But we can see in about a 4-month span from October to February, we went from that 6-7% CPU utilization up to about 14%. And today, we're hovering right around 15%. So we can see the after effect of snoozing and optimization take effect in our hardware. We're getting more for our dollar for each processor we're purchasing from the Azure PG. So the product group. So this for us is a litmus test. This is showing the good behavior. It's back to that when you watch the cost drop and then you watch the CPU utilization go up, you're seeing the massive benefit that IT has on cost, on infrastructure, mm-hmm. on the ability for engineers to focus on their day jobs, right?
Yeah.
It's really exciting to see these sorts of metrics.
And that was kind of talking about, the OS and where I'm thinking about an OS.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so we've more than doubled our average CPU utilization. And so if we look at our entire footprint, especially going back to that first slide about application rationalization, we've had this number of IaaS VMs and we've shrunk it this much. We've moved a lot of them to
IaaS.
So
here's the story for it too.
Yeah, let's make sure we tie in some of the PaaS and like, hey, what does that do to our...
Absolutely. So we're looking here at our Azure bill for the last year. Mm-hmm. Of course, we couldn't show the numbers, but what we're seeing here is midsummer.
Top one like $100 a month?
Yeah, $100. So in midsummer, we were paying $100 for all of Azure and Microsoft IT. And we're halfway through at that point our journey of shutting down our on-premise data centers and moving everything to the cloud. And since that time period, we've been shutting down about 1,500 servers a month on-premise, which was phenomenal, right? The application teams are really serious about this and have made incredible progress.
They're doing a great job.
And we can see, back then we had about 10 to 12,000 IaaS servers in midsummer. Today, kind of that February bar, the very end of the chart, we have 20,000 IaaS servers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have almost doubled our IaaS count. And you can see the cost breakout there, IaaS, PaaS, storage. We're running 50-50 generally between IaaS and PaaS. I've noticed most companies out in the wild are doing 70% IaaS, 30% PaaS. We feel like we're a little ahead of the curve for investing in PaaS resources, also because we're Microsoft and we should be. So as we see this behavior change of optimization, we see our costs go down while we continue to onboard.
Mm-hmm.
So costs have dropped by about 38% between midsummer and today, yet now we're almost to that 90% target of having 90% of Microsoft IT running in the cloud. On the top right, we have our chart for the opportunity savings that we've seen over time. You can see when we launched the tooling midsummer, of course, that we were wasting a pretty good chunk of our bill. I'd say 20 to 30% of our bill was opportunity to downsize or snooze.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just for recommendations we had generated at that point. We come up with new recommendations, like we talked about, every few weeks, and we publish them every few months once we really get smart about what the recommendation should look like. We can also see the CPU percentage tie in really nicely. When you see the graph go down for optimization opportunity, the CPU graph goes up. And that's because you're seeing the downsizes, you're seeing the resizes. So we're seeing the really good engineering behavior take place in our bill.
Sure.
And the ability to see the behavior change and the culture change across Microsoft IT over time by using these tools and getting educated, it's been a treat. It's been really humbling to see that Microsoft IT as an organization is going cloud first. They're part of the digital revolution that we're seeing. And that's why we're here telling everybody today is that there's nothing stopping any company from using these concepts and ideas to have awesome cultural change.
And then the great thing about it is, if you think about it, I mean, a company, it's very daunting. There's a lot of companies out there that haven't started on this journey. Mm-hmm. And they really think about it and they're like, if I just take my systems as they are, I've mentioned this earlier, if they take the systems as they are and they just move them up to the cloud, they'll be spending probably too much money, right? But we've shown now that if you are smart about it, if you can move your systems up and then crank them down, turn them off when they're not being used, do right behaviors and teach people the cultural change, changing the paradigm of how you manage your resources, you can save money compared to what you would be spending in capital costs. It's the true value of the cloud.
Yeah. So you're talking about an organization. So an organization as big as Microsoft.
Yes.
We can't just say like, hey, here's how to do it, and then all of a sudden everybody's doing it. So some of these spikes are also due to reorgs happen.
Sure. Absolutely.
We kind of talked earlier about subscriptions. What are some of the, you've been doing this for a little bit.
Absolutely.
Talk to me about how, a team gets reorged into IT.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were running their own system center. Maybe they had their own labs.
Right.
How do they get to use these tools? I think, one of our biggest caveats when we built this was everybody can use it. We're extremely transparent.
Yes.
But can you kind of walk me through? I know this is a slight tangent, but I'd like you to help kind of walk through,
so
a company, reorgs, how do we...
There are different ways that you can handle the finances within corporations, right? Mm-hmm. We're a large enterprise. We use a showback model. So I am the central provider of resources, and then I show back to the different business units their costs and how much they're spending. And so then it just starts at the CIO. We talk to the CIO. He has multiple reports that manage the finance IT, the HR IT, the sales IT, these different organizations. And each of them gets a budget, right? And part of that budget is a show back that I'm telling them about what their physical spend is and then what their cloud spend is. And they've got that budget to meet. And so a lot of what we do here, a lot of these Azure bill for Microsoft IT, some of the stuff that we've worked on together is you can then take this and we've done some Power BI where you can click down to those particular business units. Yeah. And this is what your particular spend is and how you're matching up against your budget.
So to add to that, when you show an engineering leader, a general manager, or somebody that leads an organization, you show them how much money they're spending. You show them how many things they're getting with their money, like how many widgets, right? Resources, subscriptions, VMs, processors. And then you show them how much of that spend could be optimized. You show them those three things on one experience, one page, in a simple and easy to use manner. That allows them to quickly identify the problem, turn to their employees in their organization and say, hey, we have a huge opportunity here to get really lean with our cloud costs and our infrastructure costs. It's really exciting to watch that happen because that's how the culture change happens. When you see engineering leaders cast vision and they say, we can run in the cloud more efficiently. Here's how, right? And we've worked very hard on arming them with data, but really the real power of the tool goes to the engineers that looked at the recommendations, that took the action, that were forward-thinking and open-minded enough to say, maybe I can downsize. So
it sounds like the vision is more towards a developer. So
it is.
What's, as developers in other teams, what does the next version of this look like?
Yeah, great question.
So let's talk a little bit about the future of optimization. So this is a little bit of what we're talking about when we're talking about the next things that we're working on. So you mentioned that most companies right now are 70% IaaS, 30% PaaS. We're a little bit more 50-50. We're starting to look more and more about how to be more efficient with those, straight from the beginning. So we've pretty much set a mandate. Any new application development needs to be in what we call modern engineered, right? It needs to be some kind of app services. It needs to be a PaaS. I want to get, as the infrastructure guy, I want to get out of the OS management business eventually. I mean, that's so strange to say being Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
We love Windows and have Windows forever, but there's a little bit of me that's like, I don't need to patch this. Yeah. I don't need to monitor it. If I can move to something where it's a container or a microservice, where it's running on Service Fabric, where the app developer can just worry about making sure the app works.
Your concerns don't go away either.
No.
It's like, this is one of the funniest things that, you know, when we talk to, I talk to customers is, hey, you know, if we get rid of all this guy's infrastructure to manage, like, what is he going to do? I'm like, you still care about optimization, security, yeah. You know, how do we connect?
We've seen more jobs.
Absolutely. There's more
Azure
things to
resource management is this new thing that I don't think people have been hired for in companies yet.
Sure.
I think the operations teams have a natural fit there. And there's so much opportunity there to run lean, run efficient, run well-designed governance. These things are not going away.
Absolutely.
You can deploy policies that handle a lot of your security stuff. The security guys are like, hey, this is awesome because now I can go deploy these things into your serverless PaaS services.
Sure. And when you talk about these, you know, serverless PaaS services, a lot of this stuff will scale up and down on its own, right? You know, when you talk about containers, you're talking about especially microservices. Yeah. When more load comes in, it just spins up some more widgets. When the load goes down, it brings widgets back down.
Operationally, it's important there.
Operationally, perfect.
You know, I think one of the things that you know we've learned working with our operations and our dev teams is, like in the previous webinar that you spoke with Todd, how there's like the public Git repos for ARM templates, mm-hmm. and then we had kind of a corporate one. I think it's kind of important to get those best practices in there. So, if you're going to go deploy an app service environment in the template should have auto scale turned on.
Absolutely.
So that way you kind of force your engineering to do those things right off the bat. And, you know, the security people might say, hey, we're going to go put policy on some of the stuff if you're doing an ISCM that you don't want public internet endpoints on if it's a truly a corporate thing. So there's quite a bit that you can still do. You still have all of this control from the service management of making sure that we're great. But I don't have to go patch and maintain.
Where the maturity model had, you know, most companies get stuck at security. The amount of effort and people it takes to do that well, it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. There's plenty of stuff to do. And the nice thing about it, since these are stateless and they just scale on their own, there's less of the charts and graphs where we have to go and talk to people about their spend.
As long as
it scales up and up and down.
As long as they turn that feature on.
Yes.
Which we've noticed a lot of people don't. So we're fixing that as well.
Getting recommendations. It's way too much fun to just kick up a project in Visual Studio and
I mean, we've seen that. We've seen people spin up 100 instance, Service Fabric, you know, various things. And then what happens is they leave them and they go away for the weekend and there's 100 instances just sitting there. I mean, you can pick D14 SKUs and run 100 of them. Overnight, and then all of a sudden you come in on Monday and look at your bill and your hair falls out, right? So.
Absolutely. All right. So some of the things that we've been talking about are available on the Optimizing Resource Efficiency in Microsoft Azure. It's a business case study that a few of us worked together on. This guy did the majority of the work and did a great job with it. You should really go check this out. It goes into a lot more detail about what we've talked about here. It has a lot of information about how you would do this within your own enterprise, right? The things you need to worry about, how to set up a program, how to make sure that people get buy-in with it, how to make sure that you've got the right data and can make the right decisions and present it to the business leaders in order to run your operation more efficiently. You know, you talk about we're Microsoft. We've got kind of this balance of we want you to use Azure, but we also don't want you to have a bad experience with it. We don't want you to complain about, oh, this costs too damn much. No, we want you to be able to use it efficiently, be able to be successful with it, and be able to move from the hardware that you've been using to efficient cloud resources and have a good experience from the get-go. We've gone through this gauntlet, right? We've got this experience. You should just leverage what we've already done and be able to do it the right way.
Yeah, we paid that price.
Absolutely. And then also make sure you check out the Azure Twitter page. Always throwing out new information, 3 or 4 or 5 articles a day about the ways that you can run the cloud, the ways you can do new resources, the ways that you can...
PaaS type resources. Amazing architecture
tons
articles.
Tons of fun stuff that are going on there. And we'll be able to check us out on Twitter and then also make sure that you're finding more information about IaaS versus PaaS and checking that out on TechNet and the various things that are available from Azure.
And I also think we've been increasingly seeing the Azure CAT team, the Azure Customer Advisory team, I just saw in a note this morning, they're really starting to push a lot of stuff to their GitHub repos and documents and best practices. So I think we're starting to see this really awesome wave of proven practices and other things to go ahead and do stuff.
You know, I've been reading a lot lately and a lot of the industry analysis that talks about cloud optimization now becoming one of the top messages and key go-dos for a lot of organizations that are already in the cloud. Like Pete was saying, we've kind of stubbed our toe. We've learned a lot of lessons. We've generated these recommendations. We've had to engineer these solutions because as Microsoft, onboarding to Azure wasn't an option. So it's been a wonderful journey for us, and we would like to just share the journey in a way that allows other people to start off on the right foot and understand optimization. And we understand that businesses are hungry for this, and we're here to help as a company. Mm-hmm. And like Pete also referenced, we're working very heavily with the Azure team as well to make sure those experiences are full and well thought out.
Okay.
Well, we hope this session has been valuable to you today. You'll be able to watch it in a little bit in on demand. Before we kind of wrap up, we would like to make sure that you take a moment to answer one final question in the Microsoft Pulse window that our team has gotten up for you. And please provide your input about IT Showcase webinars. So your feedback, your suggestions on next topics, things like that, greatly appreciated. So, like I said, we're at the end. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks everyone online for joining us today. We have IT Showcase has webinars scheduled every month on a variety of topics from everything from Azure. I mean, they go all the way to clients to everything that we have at Microsoft. We hope you'll join us again and bring your colleagues. You can find our upcoming webinar schedule as well as on-demand webinars and other content at Microsoft.com/IT Showcase. Thanks and have a great day.